This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, and stories that lead today's show are Google Map updated with some pretty cool new features. A hacker takes out a really nasty dark web website. Michigan doing what the rest of the country should do, adding some very cool privacy protections. And we're going to talk just a little bit about WordPress dominance. And I got a lot more for you tonight, of course, during the whole show. But, of course, all the news of today and yesterday. Hey, I want to welcome you to episode 1176 of the Geek News Central podcast for Monday, February 6th. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com and listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You can support this show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider or just paypal.me/geeknews. You can always pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. And yes, I'm only been in the house since leaving soccer practice just a little bit under an hour. So studio was cold iron, got everything up and running. I'd already done the article show prep in the car, so we're ready to rock and roll, and I got a great show lined up for you tonight. I do want to welcome all the new listeners to the show. Thanks for being here. Thanks for checking us out for the very, very first time, and I'm trying to push some buttons here, and oh, that's why that's not working. So I want you to take time and get over to geeknewscentral.com. And when you're over on the website, you're going to get... Okay, yes, you can work. Not everything is working the way it should. Get over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all the great content on the website. And, of course, to subscribe to the show, you'll find on the second column of the website links to iTunes, Android, email, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or via just an RSS feed. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, go ahead and click the more subscribe options. And of course, again, visit the website daily to read all our great content. If you have comments about today's show, definitely email me here directly, geeknews@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @geeknews. Of course, join our Slack channel by sending an email to me and let me know that you want to be part of our Slack channel. I add you there. You can chit chat with other Ohana members. You can follow on Google Plus or on Facebook. You can watch this show on the Roku, Apple TV, listen on Amazon Echo by telling Alexa to play the latest edition of this show. You can listen on Stitcher, watch or listen on blueberry.com, or tell Google Home to play the podcast and then this show's name. Partner shows include No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff, Health Tech Weekly with Mr. Jamie Davis, The Gadget Professor with Mr. Don Bain, the Pro Gear site being put together by my GNC team. So I've got a great show lined up for you, of course, and this show would not be possible without our sponsor, GoDaddy.com. We want to thank GoDaddy for their ongoing support of the show, and of course, this show being having the unofficial world record for the longest ongoing continuous sponsor of any podcast known to man, being here since July of 2005. So we want to make sure you get over to the website and check out the codes that we have available, the deals that are on the street, and include a 30% off, 99cent.com, 1 month free trial of GoDaddy website builder, $1 a month economy hosting with a free domain for a year, $1 a month to manage WordPress hosting again for the first year with a free domain. Those are the deals. Come to the website at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Grab those codes, share them with your friends, family members, people that you know. And I keep getting emails from folks saying, hey, use your code here. I use your code there. I shared your code on this site. All right, wherever. Thank you so much. Just remember, using the GoDaddy promo codes keeps the podcast online, keeps my writing team employed, keeps the lights on here, keeps the car insurance paid. You know, you're really supporting a small team of independent content creators. And by using one of the promo codes, you're going to be supporting this show and me and our team in that effort. So I want to thank your support as you're basically picking up GoDaddy products and services. I know you have a lot of choices out there, but we definitely, I'm a big, big fan. Of course, how many of you saw the GoDaddy Super Bowl commercial? It It was a little dorky, I have to admit, and I didn't realize it was a GoDaddy commercial until the punchline came out. And so once again, GoDaddy surprises on the Super Bowl, along with a variety of other commercials. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, what was funny was that I wasn't actually watching the game. I had been in my office and I was trying to watch some of the commercials, and it'd come, go out during commercial break, which there was a plenty. It seems like I was like a, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down. I'd go in and watch a couple of commercials, come back in here and work, going out, because I, you know, I'd kind of been not watching NFL this year. Of course, my son's not part of that band. He's yelling and screaming. So it was kind of hard to not be a participant, but I did my best. But we'll talk more about the commercials a little later in the show, but they sucked. The majority of them sucked. They really did. But that aside, thanks for GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here. We want you to continue to support. And I want to just say straight up, we got the totals. I got my totals this morning from the team at GoDaddy. Again, big thanks to Ohana for coming through. We had a great month. A great number of people signed up for hosting accounts, picked up domain names. A huge, huge, huge plus. So you guys came through again month after month. You're doing a great job. So again, huge thanks to Ohana for their ongoing support of me and this show and of our primary sponsor, GoDaddy.com. Well, as I said, just as I got ready to start the show tonight, kind of a rough format. Anyone listening to the beginning of the show today would wonder, is this guy done actually 1,176 episodes before? The coach like racked up at 6:45, wanted to talk to the parents for a couple of minutes. Chris is in the car. I think by the time I put it in reverse, I was 6:47. I raced home. My wife had me stop. She needed some hoagies because she was doing Philly cheesesteaks, and she didn't have hoagies, so I had to stop at the little mini mart grocery store, pick up some hoagies, and I rolled in here at about like 12 minutes after 7, and we are right now 14 minutes after 8. So I apologize, but again, shower. I'm 8. Got the studio up and running, so it was pretty fast. So this is why it's going to kind of be on Monday nights, unfortunately, but that's just the way it is. Been doing a lot of it. Told you guys I've been hitting the gym, and we're there every day this weekend. Didn't go today, obviously. We'll go tomorrow and Wednesday, but my back is killing me. The pounds are going down. Oh my God, I'm not used to this yet. Hey, before we get into the full content tonight, I just want to, you know, I've had a couple of things I just share with you guys on a regular basis. And some of it you've probably seen on the Facebook page. I was sent a email on Saturday, and it was I don't think they knew they were sending it to me. They were sending it to my show, and it was a competitor that does podcast advertising, a new company in the space. And they had sent me a link to their media kit and two or three things that was in the email. So, you know, being the wanting to see what everyone's doing, I loaded up the non-public article that they pushed me to, and I read through it, and, you know, what I really... irritates me, I guess, for a better word, is when the history of this space, and you guys know I've been here since the beginning, you know, October 2004, I started the show. I was one of the first 50, 60, 70 podcasters. I've always used the number 75. I don't know if that's an accurate number or not, but, you know, it was double digit, you know, when we started the show. And been in the space, brought on the first advertisers in the podcasting space. And did a lot of stuff, and we were, you know, that was 1,000 advertising campaigns ago, and lots of work in between, you know, literally, you know, thousands and thousands of hours of work and monetizing podcasts, and, you know, really working closely with vendors. And So when I read someone that's putting down an alternate or a what they think happened or their interpretation of what happened in the early days of podcasting and advertising, and it's out of whack. It just, yeah, it's one of those things that nags at me to the point it shouldn't, but it does. It's a weakness of mine when I see, you know, basically the truth, and maybe it isn't the truth, the story being skewed. And you guys have been here in the beginning. You know, those of you have been here since the early days, you've been at as much as this as I have, and you understand the history of everything that we've done and everything that we've built and the whole nine yards. And, you know, and obviously this tech show is a tech show, but the other part of this, you guys know, you know, I talk about what I do in my day-to-day stuff and not as much as maybe as I should, but it's also, I'm trying to keep it semi-segregated, I guess, for a better word. But things in the podcast advertising space have changed very, very little from day one. We're still doing host-endorsed advertising in the middle of a podcast, in a mid-roll. And that really hasn't changed. The advertising spots that go into shows are really the same today as they were when we started. And there's a lot of people come in the space are doing advertising injection, and there's lots of things coming. And if you listen to our new media show, which many of you probably have no want or need to, but we talk a lot about this on, you know, what we're facing. And with some of the new advertising models coming on, the price of what we've been able to get, you know, on an average advertising deal, like $20 to $25 CPM, could go down to like $4 to $6 CPM with programmatic. So I'm very much a defender of the space, and trying to make sure that we are continuing to be able to pay these folks and put deals together that these podcasters are going to be able to survive. Because, and I'm getting way too deep here than I should, but the main thing that all of you need to remember is that Todd is the radio station and the talent. AM/FM station in your town, they have a full staff of people, and then they have the talent. You know, the talent does what the staff says, and this is not the case in the podcasting world. We're it. You know, we are the buck stops here. So I had another discussion with someone. We talked about a political show that's brand new, supposedly done about 1 million downloads. It's a left-leaning show, and I had someone email me and say that they were not happy about this particular podcast, and I'm just like, I haven't listened to it, but, you know, if you're that upset, maybe you should start up your own show and have a differing opinion and share your own point of view. And he basically said he didn't dare because if someone found out at his work, it would become very uncomfortable and, you know, the whole story there. And by doing a political show, you know, you're probably going to drive, depending on what type of workplace, you may drive 50 to 60% of your coworkers against you. So I understood his point. But at the same time, I told him, I said, you know, if you are this pissed, then you need to find a show, find a podcast that you love, and you need to write them a check to help them do what you can't do. And I'm not trying to bring this around to me. I just made this comment to him. And, but it ties back to this whole history of the podcasting space and how things evolve and what's going on in the world today. So it's kind of been one of those weird weekends for me and getting back in the saddle here Monday for regular business day. Definitely kind of a different mode just because I had two or three big things thrown at me. So anyway, I'm done talking about podcasting. Let's get into tech. I've got a lot to talk about tonight. And for those of you watching, Tammy and Ray, thanks for being here. Thanks for tuning in. And if you're on Facebook, please check in. Those of you on YouTube, feel free to come over to facebook.com/Cochrane, C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E. They'll bring it and you'll be able to chit chat over there a little more. Or if you're on our live.geekandcentral.com, we definitely want to hear from you in the chat room as well. If you're watching on YouTube, come over to where the Facebook channel is, all right? Okay, so let me go ahead here and and bounce what I've got in a stack for you. And I want to talk about this dark web. This is, many of you probably have never explored the dark web. I in particular have not. But, you know, the dark web is basically a non-addressable location on the internet. You're not just going to get there by a .com. You're going to have a very weird domain name that will not be indexed anywhere, or, you know, it's secret. You know, it's basically, you know, you have to get there through Tor services, and it's really about a, and most of these sites are places where hackers hang out and where people are, you know, trying to do hacks against other people on the web to, you know, perpetrate fraud, you know, make money off of banners and so forth that, you know, they shouldn't be. But this particular website, this web hosting service, was called Freedom Hosting. And this hacker got in there and apparently was operating thousands of sites, and he used some exploits that were out there publicly on the web, and he actually set up a free web hosting account and was able to infect the primary server. And when he was going through the server, he found a bunch of child porn. So he basically zipped or compressed the entire site up, database, contact information, user accounts, something like 60,000 user accounts. And he basically has downloaded 74 gigs of data and made it available to, I don't know who, but those that have reviewed it. And again, you know, this is, you know, you have to be very, very careful here. This is like a borderline, you know, you can go to jail finding this type of material on your computer whatsoever. So it's, you know, it's usually law enforcement that's going to be doing the review of the material. But he left a note on the website when he hacked it. He said, let me read the quote here, that what we found while searching through your server is more than 50% child porn, the hacker wrote in a message left on site. Moreover, you host many scam sites, some of which are evidently run by yourself to cover hosting experiences. The hacker sent an email to IDG News Service and explained how the breach came about. And the IP address has now been revealed or been made public, which will help cybercrime folks go through and be able to detect who was basically using this server. And be able to, law enforcement is going to be able to use those emails to track back who was in these forums talking about disgusting activities. This is the dark, dirty, nasty part of the, 381,000 email addresses. So 381,000 sick, perverted, nasty people were utilizing this website. Not only that, it had over 10,000 websites associated with it. It didn't have just the child porn. It also had counterfeit documents, stolen credit cards. But this is one of the bigger dark, nasty, dark web websites. The site, the actual service agreement those folks said is, you cannot host any of this type of material on our website, but it was very obvious that they were. And it just amazes me that this stuff exists, and it's shameful. So here we got a hacker that took it out. I applaud this guy, or lady, whoever it was that took this down. You know, good for him. And I hope that the people that were utilizing this website can be tracked down, and for those that have that type of material prosecuted. It just makes you shudder to think that that is out there. And it just, you know, it goes back to you know, the missing exploited children. As many kids go missing these days. It's scary. It's really, really, really scary. So, but 381,000 disgusting perverts were using that website. It's just sickening. So anyway, link will be up in the show notes. You guys can read the details if you care to on the website. All right, on a more happy note, Google Maps. Now offers easy access to important info. And I'm telling you, they're selling to us. This is a little scary. Google Maps, Marcus Lowe has announced a tweak to the service that makes it significantly more useful for Android users. Nestled at the bottom of the home screen will be a new section containing real-time information for busy travelers. Simply swipe up, and you'll be presented with three tabs offering data that will ensure you never need to consult a third-party app again. At least that's Google's plan. The three tabs are labeled Places, Driving, and Transit. The former connecting you to a curated list of nearby eateries, grouped under various lists like Cheap Eats or Business Dining. Driving, unsurprisingly, will calculate your route home as well as any potential delays in your journey and provide you links to gas stations and so forth. Finally, Transit will provide ETAs for the next public transport service to get you home or direct you to a local bus or train station. Now, this is new, of course, but bundling them into Maps ensures that you'll have even less reason to use a third-party app like Yelp or any of the other services. And I'll be honest with you, I travel. I get in a town I don't know. I go to Yelp, and the top 10 restaurants that I find in my new area, I skip those. I go to about a number 11 because that's probably about where the where the real reviews start. And usually pick, you know, an eatery from that. But, you know, never, you talk to hotels. What do you suggest? And they give you this place, you know, 2 miles over. Make sure you tell them when we send you there. Oh, yeah, because you get a kickback. Anyway, what do you guys use when you're out of town, when you're looking for a place to eat? What app are you pulling up? That would be some good feedback. Okay. Michigan lawmakers, you guys knew I grew up in Michigan, families in Michigan, and you know, you don't hear about too much tech news coming out of the state unless it comes from you know, Detroit and you know, the big automakers there. But a ballot measure introduced by a bipartisan group of Michigan legislators is sure to encounter some heavy resistance on this trip through the lawmaking machinery. The proposal amends the state's constitution to add a warrant requirement to data that law enforcement is used to obtaining without one. House Joint Resolution, HGRC, was introduced by Representative Jim Runstead, Republican of White Lake, along with 11 other bipartisan co-sponsors. If approved, voters would have the opportunity to alter Article 1, Section 11 of the United States Constitution in the following manner. Now check this out. The person, houses, papers, possessions, and electronic data and communications of every person shall be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. No warrant to search any place or to seize any person or thing to access electronic data or communication shall issue without describing them. So, it adds, and electronic data and communications, and to access electronic data or communications. It's big. This is big. So they're, you know, they're going to have to, if this goes through, and this is a big uphill battle for this particular resolution, because it requires amendment to the state constitution to essentially be able to give individuals a lot more protection of their electronic data and communications. And if we think about it, the phrase electronic data covers a lot of things normally considered to be third-party records. And currently given little to no protection under the Fourth Amendment, this amendment would establish an expectation of privacy in electronic communications and data, at least under the state's constitution. So the courts will have to consider implications of the state's more stringent privacy protections. So we'll see what happens here. But, you know, good on them. Good on Michigan for doing that. And we'll see where this leads. I'll keep you advised. Today, WordPress quietly announced that they're powering 27% of the entire internet. So this is amazing. 27%. Now, they're up only 2%. But if you think about this, ...27% of all sites on the web running by WordPress, that is just amazing. And of course, we have the most popular PowerPress podcast. We have the most popular podcasting plugin used by nearly 60,000 podcasters. It's called PowerPress. But, you know, with that, WordPress is a big target. And they just did a big update here, as we talked about in a couple of shows ago, where they had a real nasty bug. So, as a reminder, if you haven't been listening, if you haven't updated your WordPress site lately, please do so immediately. But congratulations for WordPress hitting 27%. I'm going to talk let's save it to the end. I want to talk about the drones and Lady Gaga's performance, a couple things you may not know. So we'll save that towards the end of the show. I'm sure many of you have been talking about it today and maybe know some of these facts, but we'll save it. But more importantly, Vizio, you know, Vizio? Vizio Smart TVs were doing something quite naughty. They were tracking viewers around the clock without consent. So they were essentially calling home to mama. Every channel change you made, every show you watched, it was recording your activities. Yes, very. You see, this is the danger we have with all these smart devices. But they were doing this without consent. And they've got whacked big time. They have to pay a $2.2 million fine. The settle charges that's collecting viewing habits from 11 million devices without the knowledge and consent. According to a complaint filed Monday by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, internet-connected TVs from Vizio contain what's called ACR, short for Automated Content Recognition Software. Without asking permission, the ACR code captured second-by-second information about the videos the TV displayed. Software collected other personal information and transmitted along with viewing data to servers controlled by the manufacturer. Vizio then, dun-dun-dun, sold the data to unnamed third parties for the purpose of audience measurement, analysis, and tracking. Wow. For all those uses, defendants provide highly specific second-by-second information, the FTC lawyers wrote in Monday's complaint. Each line of a report provide viewing information about a single television. In a securities filing, Vizio states that its data analytics program, for example, provides highly specific viewing behavior data on a massive scale with great accuracy, which we can use to generate intelligent insights for advertisers and media content providers. So they're collecting data on what your kids are watching, what you are watching, what maybe you and your wife are watching late in the evenings. This is a huge, huge breach. The tracking started in February 2014 on both new TVs and previously sold devices that didn't originally ship with ACR software installed. The software periodically appended IP addresses to the collected data and also made it possible for more detailed personal information, including age, sex, income, marital status, household size, education level, home ownership, and home values. The collection occurred under a setting that was described as smart interactivity feature that enabled programs, offers, and suggestions. The menu never informed users that the feature also transmitted viewing habits or other personal information. The complaint offered these additional technical details. Through the ACR software, Vizio televisions transmit information about what a consumer is watching. It goes on again about second-by-second devices, about what you're playing in DVD players. ACR software captures up to 100 billion data points each day from more than 10 million Vizio televisions. And the defendant stored this data indefinitely. Not only that, Vizio TVs failed to properly validate the HTTPS certificate of servers they connected to in transmitting this data. LG apparently has also been caught collecting potentially sensitive data, including a list of shows being watched, the names of files contained, or connected USB drives, and names of files shared on home or office networks. So, those of you who have a Vizio TV, please, let me know if they email you. Let me know what they're going to do. Let me know if they're going to take your TV back. This is smart means Big Brother is spying on you. I think at some point we're going to need to have very broad television, smart TV, over-the-top TV device disclosures on exactly what they're collecting on us. So think about this for a second. They got your IP, right? They know what you're watching on TV, the type of content you're watching. They more than likely know your politics, your sexual orientation, your lifestyle. Then tie that back to information that are collecting you and you're surfing the web. All of a sudden, as I've told you guys many, many, many times, these companies have so much data that they know more about us than our spouses, girlfriends, and kids do. They collect so much information. They have a probably big, fat, juicy profile. I think we would all be like shocked if all that data could be laid out for us and say, okay, what do you know about me? How many of you'd like to see that? Would you be scared to see that? You know, we all know what we do online. We all know the sites we visit, what we like on Facebook, what we say on Twitter. We all each individual has that collective information, but it's not something that, you know, many of us are very happy about letting someone else have, as, you know, it could be very boring or it could be very salacious, right? Yep. All right. Love to hear your feedback on this. This next article is a space article. There's a new spacesuit that's going to be flying with the Orion crew that is going to, how should we say it? Allow you to do a number one or a number two while you're in the flight suit. NASA has recently wrapped up an open, what they're calling Space Poop Challenge, for designs that improve the current spacesuit's waste collection garment, sometimes referred to as a diaper. Winning designs will be able to flush away doo-doo, urine, and other fluids for up to 6 days without the astronaut needing to use his or her hands. The substances have to be moved away in microgravity where everything floats, even the gross stuff. Not only that, the new system has to have a design that works for any gender. The final waste management garment that is created won't be used nominally, but only in certain emergency situations that require spending long durations in a pressurized suit. For shorter durations during launches and entry, the crew will plan to use just a regular adult diaper, as it fits our needs and is something we've used in the past. NASA currently used the EV mobility unit for spacewalks. This spacesuit type was first designed in 81 and includes a diaper-like waste collection garment so that both male and females can relieve themselves while still inside. The theme is designed right for... So anyway, they're making it easier to go to the camp. You know, okay, I have to share. Having been in P3s, flying in P3 aircraft for 20 years, the P3 really did not have like a modern airline facility. There was no place to go in and like sit down and then, you know, to do the flush, right? We had a stand-up collection can, you know, for urine. And then if you had to go number two, you had to go to the galley and get yourself a double trash bag. And they always had clear. I don't know why they always kept clear on the airplane, but you basically had a, like a can in the bathroom, and you'd put two trash bags in, do your business, tie the inside one up, then tie the outside one up, and then we would, outside of the galley, there was a lid that you could open, and there was a Doppler well, and the Doppler well basically was, you know, as close as you could get to the outside of the aircraft without, you know, it was the skin of the airplane. So you would put that in there, and if it was cold enough, things would freeze up, okay? So, we called it breaking the code. If you broke the code, it cost you a case of beer, because no one wanted to have to, at the end of the flight, you know, have the walk of shame with you, because no one else was carrying it. The walk of shame of carrying your trash bag in and disposing of it. So, but what would happen, and I don't know, I'm telling you guys this, but anyway, once the code had been broken, then the green light was turned on for everyone else to follow, because he who went first carried for all. So that's how they worked it in the Navy in the P3s. And that's the way it is today. So, you know, what you got very good at when you knew you were flying, you planned accordingly, because the flights were typically 10 to 12 hours. And, you just didn't want to have to break the code. Because you didn't want to have to buy a case of beer, and it was a pride thing. So people would be sometimes on landing, people would be sweating, and you know, the ladder would go down, and people would run for the restroom. But it's stupid things, just stupid stories from the Navy. But and can you imagine? I wonder what kind of ritual they have in the in for astronauts. I wonder if they have something like, okay, if you like a drop of deuce in the spacesuit, you know, you're like, you have to clean, or what? I wonder what there has to be something that that is a penalty, that the astronauts, have to comply with. But anyway, so just to let you know that serious business. Over on the, dailygalaxy.com, there is a story about doing some drone flights over the top of a volcano. And I guess, and I didn't really know this, in 2000, there's like five places in the world that have permanent lava pools or lava lakes. And one of those, or seven permanent lava lakes. And this one's huge. It's a 12-kilometer... a cauldron, and spectacular lava lake at its core. But they flew some drones over and mapped it out. They've never been able to see everything at this particular location. So a pretty cool video to go along with this. Not all the drones survived, but they were able to get some remarkable videos. So I have that up shared up with you in the show notes. Also, if you were in Milwaukee, there was a huge, huge, brilliant meteorite that blazed through the sky a couple of nights, actually last night. And so likely sprinkled some space rocks into Lake Michigan as well. But this was pretty big. So they lucked out without having anything hit the ground as far as they know. But a dozen home security videos captured it. A little bit of trivia thing. The soccer ball that was recovered from the ill-fated Shuttle Challenger has been turned around. And I didn't know they recovered this. A soccer ball that was on the ill-fated launch is now made it to orbit thanks to a shared connection between one of the fallen astronauts and the current commander on the International Space Station. NASA's astronaut Sean Kimbrough, the commander of the station's Expedition 50 crew, posted a photo of the black and white ball floating in front of the windows in the orbiting cupola. It was one of the astronauts' daughters that was they were bringing it to orbit. But anyway, this is very, very cool. And so I think, I don't know if it's going to be a permanent resident up there or not, but details will be in the show notes. All right, the RIAA, you know, we haven't talked about them in a while. You know, for many, many years here, they were enemy number one on this show, right? Well, the RIAA has sued hip-hop mixtape download site Spinrilla, a group of major labels, including Sony Music Entertainment, Warner Brothers Records, and Universal Music Group, has filed a lawsuit against Spinrilla, a popular hip-hop mixtape site and app. Helped by the RIAA, the label is accused of site owners of copyright infringement, demanding damages that could reach millions of dollars. So it's all about mixtapes. You know, in the 80s and 90s, man, I made mixtapes on cassette, and you know, I never made it to the CD era. But today's mixtape comes in the form of MP3 file. And what a mixtape is, it's a, you know, it's a mix. When I was had skills, you know, 4 or 5 tables, and we would mix different beats in and overlap, and fantastic. Had a great time doing it. And when I was stationed in Guam, I got taught by how to do this by a guy by the name of David Fielder. And but now if you try to do this and put this online, the RIAA is coming after you. And this is part of the issue that SoundCloud has too, is some of the licensing that they've had to put together. So labels estimate the Spinrilla Android app has been downloaded and installed 5 to 10 million times. It's among the most popular music apps offered on Google Play Store. So, mixtapes. Don't put them on. Don't put your mixes online, all right? They're just going to squeeze them for money, I'm sure. We'll see if they shut them down. Who will know? All right, this next topic, I want to talk a little bit about it. And I have to bring up an article first. So I'm doing a search here. I want to bring up the list of the 7 countries on the ban list. So let's see what I get here. All right. So here's the countries that are on the ban list that, you know, it's going through this big battle that's going on right now. This, you know, this, the president and the courts and all this stuff. So Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and Libya. Yes, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and Libya. Okay, so let's just think about those 7 countries, all right? So today, when I read that these 96 companies have told and sent a letter to the president or objected to the ban, I tried to correlate why, okay, is it for the principle Or are these companies, do they have a lot of employees from Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and Libya? The last time I checked, there wasn't a lot of tech talent, maybe with the exception of Iran, for people that have left Iran. And I maybe I'm wrong. You know, when I think about the countries that support tech companies, I think of the Philippines, I think of India, I think of Ukraine, I think of, you know, a lot of the old Eastern European countries. I don't think of a lot of, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know a lot of tech stuff coming, or tech people coming out of Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, Syria, Iran, and Iraq. Now, the exception again, maybe expat Iranians. So when I hear this, and just asking a question here, how are those companies currently being hurt, or are they? I'm just asking this for all of you to either say, or write me a note and tell me why. They say the order makes it more difficult and expensive for U.S. companies to recruit, hire, and retain some of the world's best employees. The order makes it more difficult and expensive for U.S. companies to recruit, hire, and retain some of the world's best employees, disrupts ongoing business operations, and threatens companies' ability to attract talent and investment to the United States. Is Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and Libya investing in the United States? Are they... So I'm playing devil's advocate here a little bit for you. So help me here. The order makes it more difficult and expensive for U.S. companies to recruit folks from Iraq, Iran, Syria, Yemen, Sudan, Somalia, and Libya. Are we recruiting people out of Iran? I don't think so. Maybe I'm wrong. So someone help me out here. Again, what was to be a temporary ban. So just my kind of thinking here. You know, and if any of you have seen what's going on in Somalia, I'm sorry. It's a very bad situation in Somalia. I mean, really, 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 really bad. It's a sad situation. And it's been bad for many, many years. Syria, we all know the situation there. Iraq, we know that, you know, there's this ongoing war in Iraq still. I don't know. I guess you guys help me out here. It's just, though, and it was, if it would have been India on that list, or the Philippines, or Malaysia, Singapore, you know, I could understand how recruiting would be impacted. But I'm just, again, I'm playing devil's advocate. You guys help me out. Okay. Ray says in the chat room, they feel the consumers do not agree with the ban, so they want to seem to be one with the consumer. The majority of these companies know their consumers. If their consumers say they're not rejecting or even being silent, they may lose their consumers. I don't know. It's interesting for me. All right, we'll leave it there. Now, one thing that I found was a New York Times article talking about a very detailed case study on how technology was being used to train individuals who were initially accused of being lone wolves doing bad things in a variety of countries. And they go through case by case by case how they were being handled, the type of communications, the type of security that they were employing. and exactly how they were doing these things to make someone appear to be a lone wolf, but actually having had a huge support network behind. It's a great article to be read. If you're interested in how someone that may have been accused to be a lone wolf wasn't necessarily a lone wolf. So anyway, the tech part of it's pretty cool. Moving on to more science stuff. A wild new helium compound could rewrite chemistry textbooks. So anyone that's been through school chemistry, high school chemistry, you know that helium atoms do not interact with other atoms to create compounds. And actually, I kind of forgot that. So I actually had to kind of Google and look that up and go, okay. And I wasn't a big science guy, you know, chemistry guy to begin with. So I may have slept through that class. But an international team of scientists think they've created a stable helium compound, meaning one composed of both helium and sodium atoms together. Discovery would be wild, not only because the way it goes against some of the basic assumptions of chemistry, but also helps scientists better understand the way atoms act in the high-pressure center of gas giant planets. So I'm not going to go into details here for you chemistry buffs. Those of you that get excited about this kind of stuff, I'll have a link up in the show notes for you to review. Also, you know, apparently in Russia, there's no gambling, or at least legal gambling. There's no slot machines and that kind of stuff. But it appears that there are whole teams in Russia that do nothing but try to figure out how to hack American slot machines. Or slot machines throughout the rest of the world. Most countries and most cities, including Nevada, they basically allow the casinos to win a certain percentage on their slot machines. And, you know, that might be 5, 6, 3, 2, 7%, whatever it may be. And, you know, oftentimes you'll see a sign, 100% returns on slot machines or something to that effect in Vegas. But on June 2nd and 3rd, a number of a casino's machines had basically spit out a lot more money than they should have. And so they started doing some investigations. And it turns out that these Russian syndicate guys were coming in and basically figure out a way, because they bought machines or got a hold of machines and reverse engineered them in Russia. And then by using a cell phone and recording how the spinner spun, they were able to send that video back to Russia. They were able to do some analysis and then come back. And basically, they would hold the cell phone, and every time the cell phone buzzed, they hit the spin button on the slot machine. And they were trying to get it down to the precise time. So they would send the buzz 0.25 seconds before you had to hit the button. And while people weren't 100% accurate, it was accurate enough that people were able to pull out $1,500, $2,000 out of a machine, and they would move on to the next one. Over a day, they could pull $20,000, $30,000 out of a number of slot machines. Well, 90% of that money was going back to Russia. 10% was staying with the people that were perpetrating the crime, but they got smart, and the casinos figured out what's going on, and a whole bunch of people have gotten arrested. But they're like using some serious science to hack the casinos, and it gives you some insight into what's going on, some of the tech being used in slot machines, and how they're really good at catching people that should not be winning as much as they should. And basically, they tracked the how they figured out who these folks were was because there's cameras everywhere in these casinos. They actually took the license plate number from the rent the car, got that reversed into who rented it, figured out where the individual was from, and then got a picture, flagged them, and then they walked in the casino next time. Boom, they got them. So very, very cool. People are doing a hard time right now because of this and will be deported when they are released from prison. They didn't have to kill anybody to be deported. They just had to rip casinos off. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the beginning of the show, the seven, basically about Super Bowl commercials, and I wasn't really taken by a lot, but a few of these, they talk about this, and on the article, The Verge, wasn't bad. The Skittles commercial, that was, you know, that was dorky, but kind of cool. I thought the Budweiser commercial with the dog was horrible. The Bush commercial with the push, I thought that one was kind of cute. The Kia one. you know, I'm watching this and I'm like, whoever, I didn't know it was Kia. And I thought, whoever's doing this is really making Greenpeace and all the people that are environmentalists really, really mad. And it's about this eco warrior mom. And then in the end, it basically shows the Kia eco car that they have, the environmentally friendly car. But I thought it was borderline, like, enough to make some people mad, and some of the stuff they were showing, they were actually kind of being insulting to an environmental type. So, but I tell you, the one that really kind of, my wife and I both kind of had raised eyeballs, T-Mobile. Holy smokes. Were they borderline, like, not child safe? Some of the stuff they were saying in there is like the, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey type of the commercial, and the, I was kind of, it was like, we both did one of these, and my youngest son said gross on one, so I think T-Mobile really pushed it a little far, but definitely, I didn't think the Honda one was good. Mr. Clean one was kind of creepy. And you have a housewife that's trembling over a anime, a little bizarre. I couldn't even figure out what the advertisement was with the guy that was wearing the yellow suit. You guys see that one where it was something yellowtail something? I don't even know if it was. I assume it was wine or whiskey or something because he's carrying around. It was really, that one I think was bad. But anyway, tell me your favorite commercials of the Super Bowl. I thought they were pretty blah, to be honest with you. I really, really did. Ray, I know you have to cut out. No, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Thanks for hanging with me this late. Hey, the Japanese cargo craft that fell back there Sunday after delivering supplies to the National Space Station, they didn't get their secondary test done. They weren't able to do the space junk cleanup test. They couldn't deploy the big collector that they were going to deploy. That didn't work out so good, but it did burn up and take some trash back. Also, there's NASA has made an agreement. There's going to be the very first commercial airlock is coming to the International Space Station in a couple of years. They're working with a company called NanoRacks. And they're basically being designed to be able to launch bigger satellites. So up to this point, they've only been able to launch out of the Japanese airlock, satellites about the size of a microwave. So they're trying to do more low Earth launches. So they're going to be working with Boeing to come up with an airlock that they'll be able to use to deploy the little satellites for their customers. So pretty cool. Hey, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can get 35% off the Samsung Camera Gear 360 high-res VR camera. I'll give you some warning about this. I have one of these. Having a very difficult time processing the videos from this 360-degree camera, even with the software Samsung provides. I don't have a high-end Samsung phone that will do it directly, so I would not recommend getting the Samsung Gear 360-degree high-res VR camera unless you have a top-of-the-line Android Samsung phone. Make sure it's on the list that can process these high-res VR cameras, and I don't think that they have software that works with a Mac. I think it's only PC only at this point. I may be wrong, but I've had huge trouble processing these 360 videos from the camera. Very disappointed in this particular product. It does great videos and great pictures, but just post-production of it has been the app crashes, freezes up, not having a lot of success with it. So if you have something you're using to process 360 pictures that's other than the software that Samsung provides, I really want to hear from you. DJI wants you to have a terrible, embarrassing Valentine's Day. They're saying that love is in the air and buy your significant other a drone, or love is in your hand and buy them a Osmo. Fellas, this is not the time to buy your wife a drone unless she wants one and not for Valentine's Day. This is a good way to get some time in the doghouse. I applaud DJI for trying to be original here, but, you know, come on, DJI. This is, you know, you could have done something like take your tax refund and buy a drone or something like that instead of, you know, it's okay. Maybe girlfriends or wives, maybe you want to buy your husband a drone for Valentine's. You know, I don't know, but, you know, it's a little odd campaign. there is word on the street that Apple is working on some sort of augmented reality glasses, and it could be coming soon. Skull continues to say it's going to happen probably about the time that they launch their new facility, but everyone's kind of scoffing on that. We'll see. But apparently it is coming. Also, did you know that an enormous Tesla installed battery power storage facility is up and running in Southern California? Edison's Mira Loma substation in Ontario, California holds enough energy to power 15,000 homes for 4 hours. It's huge. 80 megawatt hours electricity with a peak output of 20 megawatts. So basically, it's designed to reduce the need for peaker plants, electricity generation facilities that run when electricity demands are particularly high, such as on a hot afternoon when air conditioners are running full tilt. They're expensive to install and maintain, so basically they're trying to come up with a way to kind of not have to spin up more generators. So they're called a 396 power pack that Tesla has installed. And though 80 megawatt hours of batteries may seem like a lot, it's the same amount of battery capacity that the company puts into its cars in just 3 or 4 days of production. So not that much. So very, very cool. Okay. I thought they were going to use it for like green solar dips or something, but I guess not. A lot of debate going on right now and multiple court rulings that are causing some challenges for the Department of Justice and people are trying to secure data. Really, the question remains, can the U.S. government demand that it is able to reach into the world servers with the tech sector's assistance to basically pull data if your email is sitting offshore? A federal magistrate in Philadelphia answered that question Friday in an affirmative, ordering Google to comply with a U.S. warrant and transfer email stored overseas to the United States so the FBI could examine it as part of a criminal probe. Yet just 2 weeks ago, a New York-based federal appeals court let stand its highly publicized July decision that allowed Microsoft to quash a U.S. court warrant for email stored in its servers in Dublin. So you've got conflicting rulings. This is probably going to go up to the appeals. And we'll see where this leads and probably end up in Supreme Court. But these courts are like all over the map. And you just wonder how much legislating there is from the bench. And instead of following the letter of the law, you would assume that they wouldn't be able to reach overseas and grab something out of an overseas server and bring back. The San Francisco Police Department has kicked the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force to the curb. A little bit of political play here, but the San Francisco Police Department is no longer working with the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They're basically said, get out. We don't want to work with you folks anymore. So this is kind of surprising. And if I was living in San Francisco, I think I'd have some concerns. But I guess they don't feel they need the assistance of this type of information into the San Francisco community. So just to let you know, a lot of craziness out there. Oh, the FCC, man, oh, man, oh, man. It's no surprise that the U.S. Federal Communication Commission Chairman Ajit Pai has rolled back some of the changes made by Chairman Tom Wheeler. But as we talked about in the last show, a lot of money is going away. And a program called the Lifeline Program, which allows money to like $9 a month to be given to needy families to be able to help them have an internet service. I don't know if the Lifeline was like the free phone program before, but it's been extended into the internet. And essentially, he has possibly pulled funding on that. So we'll see where this goes, but it contradicts the chair's stated goals for the commission. So time will tell where that's going to play out. But politics at play in many places across the tech space. Malware distributors are switching to less suspicious file types. So, you know, they've kind of figured that JavaScript is getting caught pretty easily. So now they're sending malware in LNK and SVG attachments instead of JavaScript. But I run Malwarebytes on my computers and been protected so far from getting any malware, knock on wood. Uber sued Seattle over law allowing drivers to unionize. It was kind of ironic because company announced 2017 to be the year of the driver, but yet they're suing Seattle over the law allowing their drivers to unionize. All right, next up, those of you that are familiar with aircraft carriers, the U.S. Navy is to decommission the first nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Enterprise, and has been decommissioned. The vessel launched in 1961, and it's mainly known for playing a pivotal role in several major incidents, including the Cuban Missile Crisis, Vietnam War, the 2003 Iraq War, and it's eight reactors, let it run for years at a time, all while making more room for the aircraft and their fuel. But as you might guess, the decommissioning process was started when Enterprise went active in 2012. It was considerable trickier because what they have to do is they have to extract the nuclear fuel. And also, beyond this, the ship will have to be partially dismantled to remove the reactors. And then they'll be disposed of relatively safe at a Hanford site, home of the world's first plutonium reactor. And we'll see what the long-term environmental impact will be, but 40-plus years, 50-plus years of service. And I think the taxpayers got their money's worth out of the USS Enterprise. All right. Apple, oh my gosh, Apple is developing a new connector for Lightning and USB-C headsets. Have we not had enough adapters? They're killing us. They really are. It's just simply incredible. All right, where am I on time? I'm doing, I guess I'm okay. There's more stuff going on. If any of you have ever had a family member or friend or an acquaintance incarcerated, you may have gotten a collect call from the jail to basically allow a call to come in. Those calls have typically been very, very expensive. Matter of fact, jails use it as a cost center to earn money. They have deals with the phone carriers. You know, it's like $3 a minute or some ridiculous amount of money. But in 2015, the FCC moved a cap what many to be considered an extravagant, very high rate for inmate phone calls. Shortly after, the agency was sued by the prison phone industry, which challenged the agency's authority to set rates for calls within state lines. Now, the lawsuit had been advancing, but the present election brought a new administration to the White House and the FCC. And he said in a letter that the agency would no longer defend the agency's in-state rate caps in court. So they're basically walking away and allowing a legal win by default for the phone industry. But that's not completely the case. Instead, a hearing today continued as scheduled, with the FCC simply refusing to make its case. Other parties, however, continue to advocate for the caps in court, with the FCC on the sidelines. And the judges are completely, like, baffled here, because you've got non-FCC entities trying to get the caps held, the phone industry fighting back, and the FCC kind of like over here waving, saying, we have nothing to say. Wow. Wow, 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 wow. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. Yes, millions of posts on Facebook, 100 million users put stuff up on Facebook, no surprise there. The drones, let's talk a little bit about the drones. Did you guys know that the drones didn't fly during the Super Bowl? They actually flew a couple of days beforehand and pre-recorded. Did you know that Lady Gaga's rooftop fall was not done live? It was pre-recorded. She descended from some part of the stadium, but she didn't descend from the roof where she sung. So apparently, because of flight restrictions, the first segment of last night's Super Bowl halftime show, where she spoke part of the Pledge of Allegiance, before jumping supposedly 265 feet to the stage, did not entirely happen as it was televised. And everyone that was in the stadium obviously did not see the drones because they didn't really fly. So I thought you might want to know that. And, I thought it was kind of curious. But there was about 300 drones, Intel drones, and they had LED lights on them. They got a special waiver to allow them to fly up to 700 feet, receiving special permission from the FAA. Each drone weighed a little less than a volleyball, and it was equipped with LED lights, obviously. And Intel said developed special software to automate the animation process, but during showtime, the drones could be operated by a single pilot from one PC. So that was part of Intel showing off their prowess and synchronizing drones. Okay, a couple of things to wrap up the show here. One from coast to coast. A video is showing five military accents that were kept secret, supposedly. So this is a video that you'll be able to check out. Also on Coast to Coast, there's an article about Fukushima radiation levels going way, way up, with a concern about the plant leaking, and see where this leads. But I think that's all I've got for you tonight. And hope you enjoyed the show. A little weird start to the beginning. We've been a little long tonight. But as always, I appreciate everyone hanging out with me. Hey, if you want to send your comments, you can to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. And love to hear your thoughts on the posturing, or at least I'm assuming the posturing of the 96 tech companies and how it relates to the actual seven countries on the not currently banned list. So, love to hear your feedback. And, you know, having spent time in the Middle East and having had some experiences that scared the absolutely living crap out of me, and not knowing if I was going to make it out of a restaurant, without injury, there are some very, very bad people out there that absolutely, unequivocally hate our guts. And the wrong type of person getting into this country, it could be really, really bad. So whatever vetting has taken place, I hope they've done a good job or will do a better job as they move forward. But the only way you can understand this, and most people will not maybe agree with me on the show tonight, but the only way that you can understand this is to, and don't get me wrong, there's 100% the other side of the fence too, a lot of wonderful people, but boy oh boy, the minority of individuals that want to see harm will do harm. But I'll leave it at that. All right, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can drop us a line anytime. Follow on Facebook, drop a line, Twitter as well, at Geek News. I want to thank you for being here. We'll see you back on the show on Thursday for another live show. The schedule is still as I had planned. I'll be heading to Tampa on the night of the 21st to see my daughter. So there will be a show on the night of the 20th. But there will be no show on February 23rd. And then I don't get back until the 28th. So I'll try to see if I can get someone to step in and do a show while I'm out. But everyone, thanks for being here. Everyone, take care. We'll see you Thursday night on the Geekness Central Podcast. Everyone, take care. Aloha. Bye-bye.